What compelled you to write about this legendary horse, American Pharoah?
For the past 20 years, I've covered it for the New York Times. And for the last nine times that a Triple Crown was at stake, I sat up in that press box in June hoping to see some history, never to see it happen. And when American Pharoah turned for home last June 6th, it was the most electric few minutes ever in any sporting event I've been in. Everybody, 100,000 people were rooting for one thing, for him to do it. It was really a communal moment. And I thought, hey, we know he's going to do it. It went crazy after he did. But how did he get here? And I'm not talking about the three races. I wanted to know what little bit of luck, what magic, what did he have that 13 others in the past 37 years didn't have to complete the sweep. And so, you know, that's what I did. I went back and talked to people. It gave me a chance to tell people aspects of the sport that I had learned over my time reporting it, like what goes on in the breeding shed and how they match these horses together. So, you know, it was just one of those projects that I have a deep passion for horse racing. I've owned horses. I have been around them in the mornings. I've written about them. I know the economics of them. So it was just sort of the perfect storm with a tremendous horse that allowed me to write this tale.
And before my next question, I have to sort of, I got goosebumps a little bit because you were telling me about how there were millions of people all rooting on one horse. I was in a sports book in Las Vegas, actually, during the Belmont Stakes after my buddy's bachelor party. We all played, you know, the trifectas, and we boxed with American Pharoah. And if I could just explain to you the excitement in a room with all these men jumping around, hugging each other, it was just an incredible feeling. I certainly know what you're talking about on that one. But getting to this point, this is what my argument was for a long time, and then it sort of got squashed last year. We had heard, and if I'm not mistaken, it was California Chrome's owner. After he had lost in the Belmont Stakes, he was very upset that the winner of the Belmont Stakes that year, and I can't quite remember who it was, but did not run in the Preakness, and I don't know if he even ran in the Kentucky Derby. One of the things I'm always curious about is, it's changed a little bit, but before last year, did you ever have the idea that these horses should be racing in every single race up until the Belmont Stakes so that it is an even playing field? Or do you think it's okay that, you know, an owner might say, I just want to enter into the Belmont Stakes and kind of be a spoiler?
Well, it's better for the animal. You gotta treat these as athletes. And no, I never thought you had to run all three. But I'll tell you, that played into why it's been so long since we had one. If you go back to the 70s, secretary at a firm, Seattle Slew, first of all, they didn't race against 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby. They raced against 8, 10, 12, because in those days, those horses were owned by families and sportsmen who bred to race. Now, it's a commodity. I mean, if you win one of these races, you go to the stallion shed worth $15 million. So if you have a horse that's kind of iffy, but there's 20 spots in the gate, you're going to throw them in there. Then, in the old days, and I say that, the 70s, those same horses ran all three, just like you're proposing, or just like the owner of California Chrome proposed. And so then Preakness and Belmont were fields of 8, 6, 7. So, you know, you knew who you were running against. It was a beat-up field. So I think that's why we had that bunch of them right there. In this day and age, only the Derby winner has to go to Baltimore. I mean, I'm kind of surprised Exaggerator's going down and going to try him again. You know, I got to admit, as a former owner, if I had a horse, I might want to wait the 5 weeks, rest him up, and take him to Belmont and try to be the spoiler there. You know, the Preakness is a fine race to win, but a Belmont's a better race to win. So, you know, I think all those things have conspired along with the breeding that's gone into it. And I go back to the money factor. You know, now these horses are so valuable that the premium has been put on speed on the dirt at a mile. They're not bred to go as long and to run as much as they used to. So that has also put an obstacle up in these past 37 years. So, you know, it's supposed to be hard, you know, 12 and over 200 years. That's should be as it is, a hard thing to accomplish.
And you mentioned, you know, tough conditions out there and obstacles. We're going to have obstacle this weekend, and it's going to be weather here in Baltimore, D.C. area, calling for 100% rain pretty much throughout the day. Now, last year, I'm sure you remember, there were those whipping up of wild storms that were happening right before the race was run, but American Pharoah just seemed to improve with every single race. Only won by a length in the Kentucky Derby, but by 7.5, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the Preakness he won by. But also, he, you know, braved those elements and ran just fine. How much of a factor is that? And are you worried about Nyquist? Do you think Nyquist can win this race coming up this weekend with the bad conditions?
You know, it's a huge factor. And we're not going to know for sure until Saturday afternoon. And if it's a deep, muddy track, if it's a sloppy, soupy track, if it's just raining the whole time, as you pointed out, it was raining sideways when American Pharoah took the track last year. It was just a downpour. And he had the advantage that day because he had run previously in the mud and showed an affinity for it. And so it was kind of like he got the perfect conditions. And his nearest rival, Firing Line, had not, fell out of the gate in the slop and had no chance. That's why the big victory. Exaggerator won the Santa Anita Derby on a similar muddy, wet racetrack. Jumped what we call in horse racing, moved way up. It was like he was a way faster horse and more impressive visually on the wet track. Nyquist has some breeding for it, and that's, you're going to have to see how much breeding has for it. In the Florida Derby, he ran on a track that was labeled good, but it was not anything like you're talking about, like I'm anticipating. You know, it's raining there all week. It's going to be 100% Saturday. You know, I don't know if that means driving rainstorms or if it's going to go on and off all day. So, you know, we're going to have to see. But that's definitely changing the complexion of the race. I mean, what happens when you get on those tracks, it kind of favors a Nyquist because he can get out in front. He runs from the front. And what bothers horses behind him is the mud coming back and hitting them. So, you know, he may just get out and be able to gallop around there and nobody will catch him. An interesting twist to handicapping that race.
Want to ask you next about Bob Baffert and what makes Bob Baffert such a successful trainer. Now we have Doug O'Neill this year a couple of years back who was, you know, barring an injury or a setback, could have been our, you know, Triple Crown winner after Affirmed. What makes guys like these so great at the jobs that they do, and what separates them from the other trainers?
You know, it's like that old question, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. I mean, Bob Baffert has been around horses with his hands on them since he was a 9-year-old boy. You know, working in the backyard with his father, getting a horse ready to go take down to the local airstrip in Nogales, Arizona, and run against fellow farmers and horse guys. It's like guys in the Midwest who get in the garage and play with cars and then take them to the track to race them. And he's very proud of the fact that he has been self-taught, that he has worked at the lowest levels and worked his way up. He knows how to be a horse, kind of, you know, he understands them. He can tell when they're hurt. He can tell when they're feeling good. He can make the adjustments to make them that much more comfortable. You know, think NASCAR and a crew chief, somebody who can, like, tinker just right to get the car ready. That's what you do to get the horse ready. And, you know, his record is there. 4 Derbies, 6 Preaknesses, a couple Belmont Stakes. You know, he's in the Hall of Fame. Doug O'Neill has got 2 Triple Crown wins. Hasn't been around him as long as Bob Baffert has. Didn't come up as a horse guy. Came up as a high school, L.A. high school guy who found his way to the track, fell in love with the world, and then figured it all out and worked his way up there. So, you know, as good as he has been, he's not yet anywhere close to Bob Baffert. And then the other thing, and the thing that you just can't replace, and I discovered when I was writing the book, is you got to have an extraordinary horse. American Pharoah was a perfectly engineered specimen with a flawless stride, and it was this isn't me saying so. It was recognized when he was 3 months old by the farm manager where he was getting weaned. It was recognized as a year old when he was getting ready for the sales. It was recognized by the McCathan brothers, and this is long before he got to Baffert, when they were training him to be a racehorse in Florida. You know, that's what makes a Triple Crown champion, an extraordinary talented athlete.
And so another question for you here, and I've never been one that when I'm making my picks for horse racing that takes pedigree into a complete sort of that's what I'm going off of. The pedigree of American Pharoah and the pedigree of Nyquist. Tell all the listeners out there a little bit, how much do you put into sort of handicapping these horses and what you think, how important it is when you're trying to assess how successful they'll be on the racetrack?
Well, you know, on pedigree, you mainly want to see that they came out of a line that has produced previous winners. And you want to see a little bit what they were suited for, what the pedigree says they were suited for distance-wise. And they call Tomlinson numbers, if he's a mutter or not. There's a measurement there. But, you know, now you kind of throw it out with Nyquist, because Nyquist was an Uncle Mo, is an Uncle Mo. That's a first-crop sire who would won at a mile and a mile and 16th, but just ran up the track whenever he went longer. Well, Nyquist ran right through his pedigree page last or 2 weeks ago in Kentucky, went in easily at a mile and a quarter, had no trouble with the distance. So, you know, pedigree's just sort of one of those puzzle pieces you put together. And it's something that I've enjoyed about the sport long before I wrote about the sport. Is I like handicapping races. It's like somebody doing their crossword puzzle. I sit down, I look at that, I look at trainer trends, I look at how he's been training up to the race, I look at his running style. You know, there's all kinds of little things that you look at and weight, and you decide what you think is most important, and that's when you go own the horse for 2 minutes when you put your $2 at the window.
And post position, how important is it for when you're also handicapping, you know, because a lot of people may think, oh, well, really, what's the difference between running in the two spot and running in the nine spot? Explain to somebody who might not know about that why post position is so important.
You know, post position especially is at the Derby, because you got 20 horses, and if you got the inside post, you're just going to get buried and you have no chance. Pimlico's looking at what, 8, 9, 10, 11. They've had them up to 12. That is very much navigable. If something happens to you early, you're not getting pinged by a thundering herd. You're not getting pinballed around. You can gather yourself, and you've got a long way to figure it out and get yourself back into contention. But there are some horses that just prefer to like the inside, usually front runners. I'm sure Nyquist wants to get the 4, 5, 6 hole and be the controlling speed. Two other speed horses in there are going to be Stradivari and Collected, trained by Todd Pletcher and Bob Baffert, just got Collected. They want to be the controlling speed, so they would like to be outside Nyquist if he's there, so they can keep an eye on him, and they have the choice to go or not go. So it's all part of the strategy. It's who your horse is, how he likes to run. If you're a closer, you don't really care where you break, because you know you're going to be behind everybody else in the beginning anyway.
Talking to Joe Drape here, author of American Pharoah, The Untold Story of the Triple Crown Winner's Legendary Rise. And Joe, it's been a pleasure talking to you. You mentioned Stradivari and Collected. Collected right now, I just saw the odds, according to Odd Shark, Collected at 25-1, Stradivari at 9-1. Do you see any of these horses? Right now we have Nyquist 5-8, Exaggerator 9-2, Stradivari 9-1. Do you see any of these horses 25-1 or greater odds really making any sort of a push to upsetting Nyquist at the Pimlico, at the Preakness? Or do you kind of think those three horses are the ones to beat and you'll have them in the win, place, and show?
You know, those, you got to have Nyquist, and you got to have him on top, because I think he's probably going to win. I think he showed something that is, you know, he's proved it. Look, he's won 8 in a row, every start. He's won at the highest level, 5 grade ones. Exaggerator's a fine horse. I think you got to put him in second, because he fires every time. The intriguing thing, and if you want to take a flyer at 25-1 or 10-1, and that's the way Stradivari and Collected will be, is you don't know who they are yet. Stradivari is lightly raced. He's only had 4 starts. 3 of them have been won, but he's done it in like fabulous fashion, winning by 14 and 12 lengths. You know, were those horses you did in those races just not as good and not as proven? I don't know. We'll find out. But he looked pretty good doing it. And Collected, is an intriguing horse, obviously because it's Bob Baffert. But he has won stakes races. And he's run like a month apart each time, which tells me he was a late, slow developer that Bob didn't even try to get him into the Derby because he knew he wasn't going to be ready and was pointing for this race all the time. And if that's the case, you know, he usually doesn't show up with a horse that doesn't have a chance. And I talked to him. He said, hey, he may not be good enough, but I like where he is right now. So those I don't discourage anybody from taking shots with long odds horses, especially those two.
Joe, thank you so much for your time. Tell the people where they can find your new book about American Pharoah.
American Pharoah, The Untold Story, is at your local bookstore. It's at Barnes & Noble, Politics and Prose. It's on Amazon. Please pick it up.